After the B-17 crashed at Bradley, some of the PFAS in the firefighting foam washed out of the airport and into nearby communities. Patty Abramowitz, who lives a five-minute drive from the airport, says a few days after the crash, she was walking by the brook in her backyard. On the water, she saw piles of firefighting foam, more than 10 feet high.
It looked like a washing machine had exploded, and it was coming over both banks of the brook. And it was like, oh my God.
So what's the best way to balance the needs of those in immediate danger against potential long-term risks to the environment and human health? Joining us to explore this question is David Resnick, a bioethicist at the National Institutes of Health. David, welcome to Next.
Thank you for having me.
So, David, as a bioethicist, how do you look at this situation at Bradley? On the one hand, there's a fire. It needs to be put out as fast as possible. On the other hand, we have potential long-term threats to first responders, neighbors, and the environment. So what's a fair solution here?
It's really not an easy issue to get a hold of. If it were, we would have a quick solution to it. But I think the first step is to carefully consider the conflicting values that are at stake, and also to consider different options for trying to reach a reasonable compromise. A lot of times that can be happen when you look at a conflict like this.
Do you see any middle ground on the issue of PFAS firefighting foam?
Well, I think there's potentially a middle ground if we could agree that we should avoid PFAS most of the time for things that are not so important for human health. I think possibly if, we could still allow it to be used, say, for firefighting and things like that, where there are lives that are clearly at risk, including the lives of the firefighters. Of course, I think another compromise, if you're going to use this foam, it's why not make sure you have some kind of environmental protections already in place, like around construction sites, you see all kinds of fences and things to try to keep hazardous waste out of streams and things like that. I know, obviously, when you have a fire, things are happening very fast, but I just wonder if there's any way that we could think of ways to contain this chemical if we're going to use it so the environmental and public health disruption is not so great.
Are there other examples that are top of mind for you where emergent health effects of a product have become evident to us and policy has shifted as a result of that?
Well, one of those, I think, is the situation with bisphenol A or BPA, where we have begun to learn about some of the adverse effects of this chemical for human health and the environment. And we haven't actually banned BPA in the United States, except some countries have. We have a ban on BPA in baby cups and things like that. But what we've seen actually is that there's been a great response by consumers and manufacturers. So a lot of products you see today will say BPA free, and they will be marketed as such. So there has been some progress on that score in terms of getting rid of BPA. One of the drawbacks of that is that products that are being substituted, chemicals that are being substituted for BPA, a lot of them are very similar to BPA, and so they may be just as dangerous as BPA for human health and the environment. We need to study those risks a lot more, but we may not have made much of an improvement in that situation, although we have had some change.
When we find products that are identified as having health risks, or there are products that are identified as having emerging health risks, and policy conflicts with that, I wonder if you can just talk a bit about what is the impetus for change here? I mean, do we see ethical decision-making processes starting top-down from industry, or is it coming from citizens in a more bottom-up way, for lack of a better phrase, I guess?
Well, I'd have to say it's probably more bottom-up, driven by concerned citizens, research organizations that start to find out about the risks of certain things, like our own organization, the NIH. Although there are some enlightened companies that are really trying to be environmentally and public health conscious, industry is mostly driven by consumer demand and consumer preferences. So if consumers want something BPA-free, or they want something to be non-GMO or something like that, then you start to see companies respond to that market demand. But very often, that market demand is not going to happen unless there's been this prior ethical discussion that we've talked about.
Are these ethical discussions happening more quickly now than they were in the past? I wonder just, is the dialogue getting more efficient between consumers and companies when it comes to implementing change?
I think it is. I think the internet is largely responsible for that because the internet allows consumer groups to organize so much more easily than they could in the past. You see blog posts and different websites. People post things on Facebook. Because it can be so fast, then people can leverage companies. They can get them to change pretty quickly because I think the internet does increase consumer power in that way.
David Resnick is a bioethicist at the National Institutes of Health. David, thank you so much for helping us break this down. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.